Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a vision for you big book study. My name is Melanie C., and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Thursday, May 22nd, 2014. Today we are reading from the big book, and we are on page 66, paragraph 1. Today's readers are Rachel, the 12 steps, Jerry K., 12 traditions, and reading the text would be Katie F. Sally A. and Marita. The reference number for yesterday, Wednesday, May 21st, 2014, is 6376. 6376. The OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Rachel to read the 12 steps.
Good morning, this is Rachel. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater and anorexic. The 12 steps. 1. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. I pass.
Thank you. I want to ask Jerry K. to read the 12 traditions.
Thank you for your service, Melanie. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And tradition 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Pass.
How our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition states, I'm sorry, we did that, how our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement to moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does require that you're sharing directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. Today we are reading in the Big Book, and we are on page 66. Let's see. Okay. I will now ask Katie to get us started. Katie F.
Okay. So I'm supposed to start with "It is plain."
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Good morning. I'm Katie F., a recovered compulsive overeater in Virginia. It is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile. But with the alcoholic, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal. For when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns, and we drink again. And with us, to drink is to die. If we were to live, we had to be free of anger. The grouch and the brainstorm were not for us. They may be the dubious luxury of normal men, but for alcoholics, these things are poison. So this is such strong language in both of these paragraphs. And it's just not mincing any words that we cannot live in anger or resentment, period. If you wake up in the morning grouchy and resentful and, full of anger about something that happened yesterday or last week or last year, you know, you have to go back to your room, get back on your knees and pray again. And, you know, that's it's a dubious luxury of normal men. And we do not, even if you're recovered, as, you know, I stated, I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. But that doesn't mean that I can now entertain angry and resentful thoughts. Does that mean I am never angry and resentful? No, I wish it did. But, you know, that's the maintenance of our spiritual condition is a daily thing. So we have to keep working at it. And it's never, there's never a graduation from this process. Now, do I still think about, you know, the fact that my father left when I was 7 and I never saw him again? No. I mean, sometimes it crosses crosses my mind, and I think that was really weird, you know, but I feel sorry for him today. I don't have that deep-seated woe is me resentment that I have.
Katie, are you there? Press star one. Katie, we don't hear you. Can you press star one? Okay, I think we'll open it up to others, and when Katie comes back, we'll get her back. Who else would like to share on these paragraphs?
Ralph, New York.
Go ahead, Ralph.
Hey, my name is Ralph, recovering this program. Thank you, everyone, for being there. I started this listening in about 6 weeks ago, and I'm getting so much from it. In this, where it says, but with the alcoholic whose help is maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. And then right there and then, it's like, this is about a spiritual change, you know? And I think this time around in OA, and I came in 28 years ago and came back again probably about 2 months ago after being in and out the last 6 years, I think it was really never about the spiritual change for me. You know, I got from you guys a couple of weeks ago when we were studying the book, you know, came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. I think for the first time I realized that this is about restoring me to sanity, not about making me skinny. You know, every approach to all my step work and even in the program through the years was coming from the angle of food. You know, what I eat, what I don't eat, how much should I weigh, I got to get thin, you know, but it was really about food, food, food. And now I'm letting go of the food, and I'm abstinent. You know, I've been abstinent for a couple weeks now, and I just feel really good because I believe that finally I think I got in my heart of hearts that this is a spiritual program, and the resentments will kill me and the anger, and it's about letting go because I think through my whole life, ever since I was a child, I was trying to control my life because I was the father and the husband at 10 years old and didn't think that I had a choice but to control, to feel safe. And today through this program, I'm in full surrender and realize that in surrendering, there's a calmness. In surrendering, there's freedom. And I won't have hopefully won't have as many angst and resentments that I've had through the years because when I'm angry, I might as well, obviously, I eat. And if I have resentment, I ultimately eat. And by cleaning the wreckage of the past here, cleaning out those resentments and that anger, I hope to be free and to do God's work. So with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Rob. KDG, KDF, are you back yet? Okay, who else?
Yes. This is KDF.
You're back. Would you like to finish up your share?
Well, I don't really know where you lost me. All of a sudden, I just was lost. So anyway, I can't, you know, rewind. I just.
Do you want
to I was just focusing on the fact that when you're reading through this, if there's anyone new on the line, you know, to really look at these words. These words individually that they use, fatal. You know, fatal is pretty, I mean, you know, it's the end. And insanity, harboring, and, you know, I think it was Larry that it expounded on, you know, the idea of harboring. You know, if you're at a harbor, if you put your boat at the harbor, it's tethered and it can't go anywhere else. And, you know, so if I think of my resentment that I'm harboring that, then it's holding me as a hostage, you know, that it doesn't matter if it's a beautiful day and I want to go over there. If I am harbored at the shore, I'm tethered to the shore, I can't go. And, you know, that's what happens when I live in resentment and anger is that I'm not free. I'm not free to go on and live the rest of my life because I'm living in the past, and I'm living in these negative feelings. So there's freedom when we let go of them and, you know, leave them in God's hands, that we let God be the judge and jury and let, you know, I can walk around free even if the other person never changes. That is not my job. So I'm just so grateful to live in freedom today, even though it doesn't mean my life is perfect. And so with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, KDF. Who would like to share?
Rochelle.
This is Paula.
Larry.
Okay, I heard Michelle.
Rochelle.
Rochelle, Paula, and Larry. Was there anyone else? Okay, Rochelle, go ahead, please.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you for this beautiful meeting. And I just wanted to respond to the word sunlight of the spirit. Every time I hear that, I am just so moved, and that's why I want to comment on it. When I think of sunlight of the spirit, first of all, I like the alliteration, sunlight and spirit. They both start with an S. But sunlight of the spirit, sunlight is like you're out there in the sun and it warms you through and through, and you could just bask in that. And that sunlight of the spirit is a sense of freedom and a sense of God is protecting us, watching over us, sheltering us, and bathing us in his glow. So that's what I wanted to share. Thank you. I pass.
Thank you, Rochelle. And Michelle, go ahead. I'm sorry, Paula, go ahead.
Thank you, Kathy. Thank you for your service, too. And this would be Paula, recovered compulsive overeater in New Hampshire. You know, I want to zero in on that second paragraph. If we were to live, we had to be free of anger. You know, isn't it strange? We think we hold anger. It holds us, and there is no freedom there. And then I want to zero in on two words, the grouch. Seems easy enough. What a simple word, a grouch. Oh, what a grouch you are. Well, I wanted to go into the AA dictionary. I go into usually Webster's, which is the same meaning. The meaning doesn't change. One who is habitually irritable, grumbling, whining, sulking, or complaining, sourpuss, complainer, fault finder. Oh, that's not enough. That's not enough to know you're not free anymore. It then it says, also see brainstorm. Strange, it's in the same line, isn't it? Brainstorm, fits of rage, sudden violent disturbances of the mind. Where then is there freedom if everything comes out of the mind? Where is the freedom? There is none. There is none. And it says clearly, they're not for us. They're not for us. And then it goes on. They may be the dubious, and I love that, dubious. Well, if you want it and you can handle it, I can't. I can't. But for the alcoholic, these things are poison. Be clear here. You can't have them in your life. For if you do, you're not free and you cannot live. So thus you are chained and you die. And as was said before, a walking death. Because you look through that anger at everything in life. Because you're such an angry person, everything is distorted. Thank you for allowing me to share. Yes, a paragraph that I don't like to share on, but yet I know this is what propelled me forward. I did not want to live that way any longer, nor do I have to. Thank you again for the opportunity, and with that I do pass.
Thank you, Paula. And Larry, it's your turn.
Thank you, Kathy, for your service. Larry, recovered compulsive overeater from Chicago. Okay, so if we were to live, we had to be free of anger. The grouch and the brainstorm were not for us. They may be the dubious luxury of normal men, but for alcoholics, these things are poison. And that was true for me. You know, the thing about anger is that it doesn't dissipate, doesn't dissolve just because I unleash it. And let me tell you, I was definitely willing to unleash it on a regular basis. You know, for a person with an alcoholic mind like mine, you know, anger begets more anger. You know, anger doesn't, you know, sometimes maybe there's this sense that, you know, let just get it out of your system. Oh, it's the people that hold on to their anger. Those are the sick ones, not me. I get it out. No, that was not the case. I had to look honestly at myself. Anger, just unleashing anger, didn't allow it to dissipate. In fact, I unleashed it over and over again. It's a vicious cycle. And so what I'm doing there is I'm transferring feelings of guilt and hurt and fear onto others. You see, I tried to escape blame and criticism, you know, because my self, you know, the self-centered existence that I was leading was so overwhelming that I wanted to pass the buck. And I would project my mistakes and misdeeds onto others as kind of like a defense, you know, a psychological defense to protect my own ego. I always saw fault in you, and I was sure to let you know about it. And for the compulsive overeater, that's okay for normal people that may occasionally, you know, feel a sense of anger, and they feel it, and they soon move on, you know. But for a compulsive overeater, for an alcoholic mind of my variety, this creates more problems in itself. You know, a good deal of my anger was motivated by a desire to not to experience guilt. They say, if you spot it, baby, you got it. And believe me, I had it. And anger is almost never a primary emotion. It wasn't for me. It's not a primary emotion. You know, human beings experience anger, but it's not a primary emotion. It's about the core hurts that underlie it all. You know, feeling, what are those core hurts for me? Feeling of being disregarded. Boy, that would get me angry. Feeling that I'm unimportant. Lord knows I want to be the most important person in the room. If I'm accused of anything, God forbid you accuse me of something, you devalue me in any way, I'll tear you apart. You know, that was the man that I used to be. Thank you, God, that he washed my brain clean of that now, and I don't do that. Reject me. Make me feel unlovable. I already didn't love myself. You know, pile on to that feeling that was already there, that sense of feeling powerless, I'm going to unleash that anger. That's why anger and the brainstorm aren't for people like me, because then I will then turn the anger onto myself. And I will unleash violence on myself in the way of, it was very violent the way I used to eat food, in secrecy and in bulk. And the violence I did to my body was beyond measure. Maybe some of you can relate. I don't live that way anymore. It's not because I read the book on how to deal with anger. It's not because I went to years of therapy and learned how to deal with anger. None of that would work for a person with an alcoholic mind like mine. I needed a power greater than myself that could change me from the floor up, from the very, you know, tip of my toes all the way through internally to the top of my head. And when God changed me as the result of working these steps, all of the people around me and the circumstances changed. I don't get anger very often anymore. And when I do, it's like a normal person, I suppose. It dissipates and it goes away, and I don't feel that I need to tear someone else up. I wonder if God restored my ego in a sense. You know, I moved from a self-centered existence to a God-centered existence. That's what this spiritual program is about. And I don't need to do violence with food anymore, nor do I need to treat others poorly anymore. So anyways, with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Larry. Is there anyone else who'd like to share on this paragraph?
Hannah.
Sharon in Colorado.
Okay.
Hannah.
Sharon, thank you. Go ahead, Hannah.
Hannah, recovered compulsive overeater in Colorado. You know what has become increasingly important to me over the years about these last two sentences, that when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off, and the insanity returns, and with us to drink is to die, is that that tells me exactly how losing my abstinence can happen. That it isn't a mystery. You know, it isn't a crapshoot. It isn't that, oh, somehow I just can't do this. It the insanity, and I used to think, so what exactly is the insanity? Well, the insanity is thinking that behavior and substances that are actually hurting me, my body and my spirit, are comforting me, are making me feel better, are helping me cope with life. That's insanity. It's just very powerful to me to see that, oh, these are where I have the choices. You know, this is another turning point. I stand at the turning point of saying, well, am I going to be angry at these people who sideswiped my car and are denying all responsibility for it? That actually happened in the last couple of weeks. Or am I going to accept what I can't change and move on? And the third step comes into play for me here when I have to ask for the willingness to let it go and move on. And that's how I stay sane. And this stuff, this really works. I mean, it really works as a practical way to deal with life and life's problems. With that, I pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Hannah. And Sharon, it's your turn.
Oh, thank you, Kathy, and thank you for your service. This is Sharon in Colorado, recovered compulsive overeater. I'm so grateful there's so many people now from Colorado. But this, boy, this paragraph, I'll tell you what, it just speaks the truth in very, I don't want to say harsh terms, but reality, facts. It is plain. Here's the fact, and I've had to have out in my margin all over in this book. This is a fact. And this is the lie that I used to believe. This is the fact. This is the truth. This is the lie that I used to believe. And my life was filled with anger, angry temper, and fearful temper. And they were the ones that activated all the other defects of jealousy and envy and comparison and just, you know, complaining, gossiping, kind of like what Paula shared in her definition there. And so that was the world that I lived in my mind, and that's what fueled my addictions. And so then it comes down here and says, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. I mean, it's dark. We're in a dark place, and we find that it's fatal. Yes, it is fatal. And then when harboring these feelings, we shut ourselves off from this beautiful sunlight of the spirit. And if I go back then two pages over on 62, it says, so here's a fact, our troubles we think are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. And that was me. I didn't think so. I still had my focus on other people, blaming, complaining, criticizing, judging. That was where I was. I was not able to see those same glaring defects within myself. And so, of course, they never got rectified. And it's not something that any of us can change in our own human willpower. And so to know that this sunlight of the spirit, I was the one that blocked it off. And I can choose to turn and then choose to walk and live in the sunlight of the spirit if I'm willing to do these basic things that they say I must do. And so it is in steps, you know, 4, the one we're in right now, and we continue on through 9 to let God change that and, you know, clean out the debris of all that anger and resentment that I held from the time I was a little child in many different ways. And I was a wounded soul walking around blind and lost, and now I have this wonderful privilege to learn this new way of life
that will set all of us free. So I just encourage everybody out on the line. I've been around a long time, and this illness was one of the hardest that I was able to lay down and let go and then begin this walk again in the light and the sunlight of the Spirit. So thank you so much, Kathy, and with that I pass.
Thank you, Sharon. This is Kathy. I'd like to take a brief turn. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater, and I'm so struck by the words that are used in these two paragraphs, fatal and grave, to drink is to die, and so on. Very extreme words. And when I first started in the 12-step rooms, I found myself reading through these paragraphs pretty quickly and saying to myself, well, that's not me, thank goodness. And I kind of minimized my disease at that time because I didn't have a lot of weight to lose, but I was not aware of the sick thinking in my head and my way of living, which was characterized by so much stress, anxiety, duress. And it wasn't until I could keep the food down for a while that I began to see how difficult life was for me without the food to fall back on. And then I began to see all the range of feelings, including deep resentment, that governed my existence. And I'm so grateful today that with prayer, I finally developed the willingness to do the work of step four, because that's where I uncovered and turned around these grave experiences that were causing me to die a very slow death. It's in this work that we do find the sunlight of the Spirit. And with that, I pass. Would anyone else like to share on these paragraphs?
Barbara?
Go ahead, Barbara.
Thank you. This is Barbara, recovered compulsive overeater in Massachusetts. This was a turning point for me in recovery when I actually saw that just as the food, excess food, certain foods brought on a living death. I mean, the word die was very clear. I didn't have to physically be in the grave, but I was dead. And being angry and holding on to that anger and re-feeling it, the resentment, the re-feeling of it, was also bringing on an actual death. And I had to be convinced of that before I could continue with the steps because, I mean, it felt kind of good to be angry at my boss or my mother or blame my husband or whoever or my neighbor. I mean, it felt good. I was, you know, I got a buzz from that I would get from overeating, but I couldn't go there anymore because, as it says, you know, my friend Susie could be angry and she could get a buzz from, but for me, it was bringing death. And I had a sponsor who gave me a phrase, God bless her, that helped me and it continues to help me. And she used to say, you know, resentment is an acid that corrodes the vessel that contains it. So I had to really take a look at what that was doing to my insides. I mean, that feeling, that buzz from being angry, and then to refeel it and get the self-pity from it and all, whatever payoff I got. I had to see that, you know, that even before it would go as far as leading back, as the text says, you know, to alcohol / food and to drink, to binge or whatever, is to die. Before it got to that point, I was spiritually dead to a fullness of life. So that's why in my daily inventories, I can't mess around with holding on to being hurt and being angry and that grouch and that brainstorm. I mean, let my friend Susie do it because she can handle it. I can't. It kills my insides. And I have to be very clear that the word poison isn't to be taken lightly. Would I consciously ingest poison, leave it in my system, take it in my system. So I like the image because it helps me to be very clear. I can't go there, and if I go there, I can't stay there. I have to go to the other steps to get out of that place. Thank you, and I pass.
Thank you, Barbara. Let's move on to the next paragraph, and I'll ask Sally to read it for us.
Yes, good morning, Kathy, and good morning, A Vision for You. This is Sally, recovered compulsive overeater in South Jersey. We turned back to the list, for it held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. We began to see that the world and its people really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had power to actually kill. How could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. So we're turning back to the list, having shared all these thoughts in this past paragraph, for the list holds the key to the future. And the key is, it's an interesting thing that the list holds the key. You know, we all want to hold the key to the car. We all want to hold the key to the front door. Keys are really important. And they're letting us know that this list, our resentment list, our list holds the key to our escape. That's what's coming. Escape is toward the bottom of the paragraph. We were prepared to look at it. Again, they're harping back on page 64, the fact-facing and the fact-finding, or the fact-finding and the fact-facing. We were prepared to look at it from a searching and fearless perspective, from an entirely different angle. So what's the different angle? We're not going to take a look at this list anymore in terms of the first and the second column of who it was or what it was and what's the cause. We're now going to look at it from an angle of the last column. So what's my part? We began to see the world and its people really dominated us. It's an interesting perspective. First of all, that it's not just people that are on our resentment list. It's some of the things that we deal with that make us restless, irritable, and discontent. I had 3 flat tires in a row in the grand city of Philadelphia where I work this past winter. And it's something that I'm probably going to have to do a 10-step turnaround on. I'm still irritated about the pothole condition of Philadelphia. We began to see that the world, not just people, but that things about this world can really dominate us. And when they dominate us, they're rolling around in our head. They just won't go away. The interesting thing is that the things on this list are the things we tried to control and that we couldn't. And ultimately, they controlled us. They took control of our mind, and they lead us to dark places. Ultimately, we want to just numb our minds for the pain that it causes us. And so the very things that we try to control, if we would let go of control, if we would surrender the control of the things, if we would surrender the outcomes of the world and its people, they no longer would really control me. Because that's what they were doing. They were controlling me. They were really dominating me. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had power to actually kill. I love the way they said fancied or real. They're throwing in the fact that my mind, you know, takes such many twists and turns that they might just be just me in my head and not really even a real wrongdoing, that they had power to actually kill me. And they did, because it led to the food, and the food would kill me. How could we escape? Such an incredibly strong word. Just like the last paragraph, the words infinitely grave, that we found it is fatal, that to drink is to die. And here we have the word escape. It's a danger zone. That's what they're saying to us. How could we escape the danger zone? We saw that these resentments must be mastered. But how? And that's the key issue here. It's no longer that when we write our list that we're looking at why, what they did to me. It's now about how I contribute. We could not wish them away any more than I could wish away my food addiction. Thanks for letting me share with that, I pass.
Thank you, Sally. Who would like to share on this paragraph?
Elizabeth.
Hiya. Kim.
Okay. I heard Elizabeth, Hiya,
mm-hmm.
and Sue. Anyone else?
KDF.
KDF. And I heard one other person.
Kim.
Leah.
And Leah. Okay, that should get us far. Elizabeth, go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you for your service. This is Elizabeth D., and recovered compulsive overeater in Cincinnati, Ohio. I, as I've said before, I love the fourth step. It was a major turning point in my recovery each and every time I've done it, but especially the first time I did it, where I had 500 resentments listed in the first column. Because after the third column, when I approached the fourth column, which is what we're getting ready to do here, that's what it's saying, we turn back to the list, for the list held the key to the future. I was instructed to say a little prayer as I wrote the fourth column on each individual person, all 500. And the prayer was, God, please show me how I have done what I've listed in column two to the person I've listed in column one and or others. Just that brief little prayer, and within a millisecond, something would flash into my mind that would show me how I had done exactly the same thing, either to the person in column one or to someone else. And as I walked through the process and did that with all 500, I was slowly and truly beginning to be transformed into a kinder, gentler person and a more compassionate person. And it, as we're going to see here shortly, they're going to start telling us that we saw that people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick, though we did not like their symptoms and the way they disturbed us. They, like ourselves, were sick too. That's how I was able to get my mind around. This prayer was how I was able to get my mind around the fact that I wasn't, you know, I had certainly withstood some injustices, but I had certainly perpetrated some injustices too. And it was amazing. And as we've said, and we probably don't say often enough, this is really about getting our spiritual connection with God back. It's not about stopping eating. That'll happen if we get our spiritual connection with God back. And this third and fourth column was the turning point, the key for me to be able to be willing to keep going in the steps and to have the courage to go through 8 and 9 especially. I think that's enough for now. With that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Hiya, P, you're next. Go ahead.
Thanks, Melanie. Hi, everyone. This is Hiya, very, very grateful, recovered compulsive eater and bulimic in Denver, Colorado. We turned back the list, for it held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. This was a major turning point for me. I had a really good time in column one and column two. column three, even look what this affected, you know. But when I was at this place where we turned back the list, for it held to the key of the future, I don't want to speak about the how yet because we're going to get there in the next paragraph, but the key to the future, that the key to the future, this was my key. This was going to unlock the door. And what's my future? That arch through freedom that we talked about in step three. So looking at this from an entirely different angle, totally putting out of my mind the first columns, looking at it from a totally different angle, changed everything because it was all perspective for me. And I also love that it says in that state, the state of seeing that the world and its people really dominated me. When I'm in that place of people really, you know, everyone else being in control, right? It says here, as Sally also mentioned, fancied or real. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, whether they weren't really wrong, I just think they were, or they really were wrong, it was killing me. And I had to be free of that because the paragraph before tells me I have to be free of anger. I have to be free of this anger. But I can't do it on my own, just like I couldn't stop eating. I couldn't stay stopped on my own. And, you know, this is a promise. This paragraph is really a promise. And I just want to make one brief comment about the paragraph before where it says the grouch and the brainstorm were not for us. And I just want to give everyone a kind of a foreshadowing. When we get to step 11, it's going to talk about rising above the storm, that our thought life is on a different plane. We're above the storm. You know, when we're in this anger and resentment, where it's a brainstorm, my head is just like thunder and lightning. But when I get to step 11, I get to be above the storm on a different plane. And that really truly is a gift. Thanks so much for letting me share. With that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Haya. Sue, it's your turn. Sue, are you there? How about KDF?
This is KDF, a recovered compulsive overeater in Virginia. We ask God to help us show the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. And so when I look at these people that are on my list, after doing my fourth step, and I think, you know, how can I let them off the hook? You know, I've got to, there has to be some justice. Justice must be served. And I'm, you know, I have to, this, it's not right. You know, how can I just say that that was okay? And, you know, that in no way does it say that we tell them that what, you know, that whatever happened to us, we don't go to the person and say, you know, I realize you hurt me deeply when I, you know, whenever in my life, but I'm going to forgive you now. That's not part of the steps. It's nowhere written that we talk to the people about what they did to us. This is totally an inside job and a job that's done with me and God. You know, that I pray for that person. I pray for them the same way I pray for someone who has cancer, you know, that they will get better. And I'm not the one who makes them better, you know. Just like I'm not the one who makes a sick person better, I'm not the one who makes a spiritually sick person better. It's God. It's up to God. And, you know, the thing that we are trying to do here is to save ourselves from going back into those vicious cycles of over and over again, finding new people to be angry with, because that's what my life was like. In disease, you know, I pretty much repeated the same patterns over and over again for the first, you know, 27 years of my life. That, you know, I was totally focused on myself. And, you know, there would be some big crisis in my life, and I focused on that, and I, you know, I just did not propel and move ahead to where my life changed and I had really had a life. I was just stuck in this, like a hamster in a cage, just going over and over and over again, you know, and that's what the freedom is in this recovery, is that I don't do that anymore. I don't have a new set of people that I'm angry with now. So, you know, that's the freedom that we get in recovery. But it's not up to me to change the person. And they may never change, as I've said. They may never, ever change, but I change. My reaction, my response to life has changed. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, KDF. And Kim? Press star one, Kim.
Oh, Kathy, I didn't think you heard me to share. Okay, hold on. Let me put my Bluetooth on. Okay, good morning, everyone. My name is Kim G, and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from South Jersey. I wanted to zero in on that fancied or real. You know, either one has the ability to actually kill here, it says. So I just wanted to give a brief example of what came out of my 4 through 9. Once again, this is the beginning of the inventory. So what I found out when I was doing 4 through 9. And when I was a little girl, we would go to my parents, my mom's side of the family. I would try to be good, and I would try to be quiet. And invariably, my mother would come over and say, "That's it. We're out of here." And we'd be all of our kids would be taken away. And I couldn't figure out what I was doing wrong. And every time I would go to my cousin's house again, I would try to be good and I would try to be quiet. And invariably she'd come over and say, "That's it, we're out of here." And I spent my life with this pattern when I went into a room to try to be quiet, try to be small, because I was always so afraid of getting in trouble. And my mother, who's in LA, I told her about this. And I said, "Mom, what is this about? Do you know what I'm talking about?" And she's like, "I don't know, Kim. Let me think about it for a couple days." And when she came back to me, she's like, "Kim, I think I know what this is." Now, my mom's father was an active alcoholic till the day that he died. And what she said was that when we were at parties at her family's house, she knew the beer that would put my grandfather over the edge. And as soon as he took that beer, she would come over to us kids and say, "That's it, we're out of here." And so it had nothing to do with me. I absorbed this as a way of life, and it was my mother trying to protect me from my grandfather. And I thought about it. I remember my cousins talking about the funny stories of my grandfather coming down in his underwear and having to pull my grandfather out of the bushes, and always wondering what they were talking about because I never saw that. So I just want to say, fancy or real, this process allows us to have a cleansing process, because whether we think this is true or not, it can actually kill us. And I have since asked my brother, who was sitting next to me with this exact thing happening, and he has no idea what I'm talking about. So here it was me as a child and the way that my pre-alcoholic brain processed things that always made it about me in my selfishness when it wasn't, and it created a pattern of my entire life. So that's the power of this stuff. I'm going to read that sentence one more time. We began to see that the world and its people really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had the power to actually kill. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Kim. And Leah, you'll be our last share today. Leah, press star one.
Thanks so much, Kathy, for your service. Good morning, everybody. Leah, recovered compulsive overeater. We turned back to the list, for it held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. Look at it, you know, a new vision. When I read that statement, I think of a new vision, a vision for you. You know, my life is going to be determined by how I think. And if my thinking, is aligned with principles and aligned with a power greater than myself, then my actions and my life are going to reflect that. But if my thinking and my vision is distorted, if it emanates from disease, chances are my actions are also going to be distorted and emanating from disease, and my life is distorted, and that certainly is where I was at when I, you know, crawled my way into the program. The program allows me an opportunity to take action with this step four and start taking responsibility for my own thinking and for my own behavior. I could no longer afford to blame other people and to blame my actions and my behavior on other people. Because if I let other people control the way I think and the way I act and control my life, there's no way out. But this program is telling me there is a way out. yes, there is a way to be free, Leia. I always focused on the outside world when I was disturbed instead of focusing on the fact that I was disturbed. And thank God, you know, the program of recovery offers me a plan where I can become undisturbed, where I can be prepared to look at these situations from an entirely different angle. And that is the whole purpose of this work, is we are moving towards a revolutionary change in my outlook and my perspective and my interaction with life. And this process, beginning with this step four, allows a change in the way I think and the way I feel and especially the way I behave. And what distinguishes the 12-step process from self-help programs is that this change is done to us, not by us. Do I have a responsibility to implement these steps? You betcha. Was this going to happen by magic? No. Was it going to be miraculous? Absolutely. And I believe that I have a better life today than I could have ever had I never had this illness because of this program of recovery, because this program of recovery has given me a new vision. I was the biggest obstacle to my better world. The program of recovery allowed for a turning inside out. Because of this step process, there was a natural progression of turning me inside out from a life-taking habit of self-centeredness to a life-giving desire to love and you know, be patient and tolerant and understanding of others. And with that, I pass. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Leia. It's now time for us to bring the meeting to a close. Thanks to everybody who has shared. We will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164 and then say the Serenity Prayer. Marita, would you please read a vision for you?
Absolutely. Good morning, Vision for You. This is Marita. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Virginia. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.